Yes, good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 18. This is the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. I hope you're having a fantastic morning. Looks like the weather's finally turning it on for a consistent period of time, at least here in Sydney Town, after all the rain we've had. Now, overnight, or just this morning in the Premier League, Liverpool have beaten Southampton 2-1. So we're down to the final day of the season. Early hours Monday morning, they're 1 point behind Manchester City in the race for the title. The other big game this morning over in England was in the Championship, where Nottingham Forest and Sheffield United are fighting for a place in the playoff final against Huddersfield, and that had gone to extra time. And as it stands, of course I can't find it just when I need it, but I'll come back to you with that score. And last night in the A-League, we saw Melbourne Victory beat Western United 1-0. 1-0 in the A-League last night, though that is the first leg of their semi-final as well. And we've got Adelaide up against Melbourne City in the next one. Now, joining us in the studio in his beautiful sky blue quarter zip jumper.
It's a lovely, lovely colour.
That soccer report was nice and crisp, Middle.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Really, I lost the score that I was looking for, Bulldog, but oh, thank you, Loz. What does it say here?
Oh, Laurie, you're a team player, aren't you?
Oh, it's still 3-3 on aggregate. We're in extra time. Thank you, Loz. What would I do without you?
I'm here to
serve. I would have found it for you, but I'm just checking Instagram, so sorry. Just not really with you.
You're a team man, aren't you, Clarky?
Yeah, I'm just checking the DMs.
No, I am team.
Find out what's going on in round town, Bulldog.
How are you, Bulldog?
I'm good. Good. Busy week. Busy day yesterday. Lots of stories. Bulldogs, Brent Naden. I've done a piece on Angus Crichton in today's paper. Victor
Radley. Go the Tigers. Poach a few.
Lots of news. Middo, let's rip into it, eh?
Let's start with the Doggies, mate. Did you see this coming? Whose decision was it? How did it unfold over the weekend?
I didn't see it coming, Laurie, in terms of leaks out of the Bulldogs camp. However, I think we all thought it was a possibility when you win 4 from 35 games. I mean, there's no denying that at some point it was going to blow, and it blew up after the Newcastle game of the weekend. Look, only Trent Barrett and Phil Gould really know whether Baz resigned or whether he was told to resign. Otherwise, he would have been axed. So I guess they'll take that to their graves, those two. But look, Trent got out with a fair bit, I guess, of dignity in terms of standing down first. It's a sad demise. Baz, I think, is a good coach. It didn't work out at Manly. It didn't work out at Canterbury. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. In hindsight, maybe he could have stayed at Penrith. His stocks were rising out there. He took the punt and it didn't work out. It's very sad.
What does a new coach think now in regards to going to the Bulldogs, or even a player in regards to going to the Bulldogs, around if the person that's in charge, Gus, comes out a week earlier and says, Trent Barrett's going to be coaching well after I leave the Bulldogs? 5 days on, he's gone. So who's in charge at the Bulldogs? What security do you have in and around a contract as a player, coach, support staff member?
Well, the board and the chairman are in charge, Clarkie, technically. You know, Gus's shadow casts a long way at Belmore. And I think, you know, we all know deep down that, you know, whatever Gus wants, he probably gets. Having said that, John Currie is the chairman, and John, as chairman, would have to make the final decision. But I know he has a lot of respect for Gus. In terms of coaches going there, Clarkie, I know there is some internal fears about how many coaches would really want to go to Canterbury under these circumstances, with Gus being such an influential and controlling figure. The debate at the moment is, do they go with a young, innovative coach like a Cameron Ciraldo, or is the time not right for that? And now is the time for a hardened coach like a Shane Flanagan. So that's the debate Canterbury's having at management level right now. Either way, though, they're going to have to learn to work with Gus. And whether that would be a turn-off for some coaches, I guess we'll find out when we know the final list of candidates.
What about a guy like Freddie Fittler? I mean, he's got a strong relationship with Gus. We all know that. And I think yesterday, when he was asked the question, it was what he didn't say.
He didn't rule it out.
He didn't rule it out. I think Freddie would take the job if asked after hearing him speak yesterday. which I never thought
what?
He wanted to do it. But I think he may have a burning desire to get back into the NRL.
So does he do this year's Origin and walk away after that? Get an intern now to get you through the season. Freddie does this year's Origin and then walk away.
When they asked him about would he love to coach, he just said, I've got a job to coach the Blues in the next couple of weeks. That's where my focus is. He didn't deny it. So I'm thinking that he might be a chance of coaching there. What do you think?
It was a surprise answer, Laurie. I thought Freddie would have just knocked it on the head. He's got a very, I wouldn't say cushy job, but he's got Origin, which is, it's glamorous, Laurie. You know that. It's Channel 9. He's on big money and good luck to him. He deserves every penny. I would have thought Freddie's lifestyle and Freddie's personality would suit the lifestyle he's leading right now. As opposed to the 52-week, 7-day-a-week,
18 hours a day
job.
It's non-stop.
And you know, there's a lot of attention to detail there and whether that would suit Freddie's character. But I spoke to a few people inside the Bulldogs over the last 24 hours and they think that if anyone can persuade Freddie to coach at the Bulldogs, it would be Gus. And Gus also wants someone there that he can, I'm not going to say control, it's over the top, but he can work with and know the outcomes.
Mm. But Gus advised Trent Barrett not to go there. Gus made that public. He said, I'm telling Trent Barrett he should not leave Penrith and go to the Bulldogs. So how can he now go to, he'd been there for 5 minutes. How can he go there to Brad Fittler, go to Brad Fittler and say, you should come to the Bulldogs?
Different board.
What's changed?
Different board for a start. So
that's obviously worked extremely well. They just flicked their coach.
Yeah.
But so might be different names on the board, some of them, but tell me what's different in and around the workings at the Bulldogs.
Well, I'll tell you what changed is the board's changed. Gus is now in charge and Gus is the decision maker.
Is there anything different to what happened to Dean Pay as just happened to Trent Barrett?
Other than being sacked.
Which we're assuming, well, we're going on Trent's word saying that he stood down.
He stood down, whatever you like to call it.
Yeah.
Well, I think they've got someone there with great football knowledge in
Gus
Gould
yep.
that is now in charge of roster management, salary cap, and is putting his nous into what he believes was a toxic culture, in his words, a shocking list management decisions that they've made. They were just making wrong decisions. He's taken it upon himself now to be in charge and to get a new coach in, to work with his coach, to build a roster to get it where it needs to be. So he's taking accountability for that.
With Canterbury's resources and money, Laurie, Freddie could do the job as a front man as well. If he surrounds himself with the right people and he gets the right assistant coaches in, and he would bring in his own coaches, no doubt. You know, he can do the job. Yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I just wanted to know how seriously he was thinking about it. And when I heard his comments and read his comments yesterday, I went, because I didn't think he would want to do it.
Mm.
I just thought, you know, with the Origin, Channel 9, not a cruisy lifestyle, but compared to what he's about to walk into if he wanted to, it'd be completely different for him.
Freddie has done it before, don't forget, the Roosters. So it wouldn't be totally foreign to him. But at his time of his life, I think Freddie's in his early 50s. It's a big lifestyle.
It's a big commitment.
Change at that age to go in and... Coaches these days aren't like the old days, Loz. You know that better than anyone. You know, they work 18 hours a day. They're in there at 6 a.m. and they're out at 9 o'clock at night.
Well, you always got to have your phone on. You always got to have your phone on because something might happen in the middle of the night. Something might happen early in the early mornings. You just got to be on top of it all the time. Who do you think? Who do you think will be selected and who would you like to see selected?
I think...
And without sort of getting names in terms of like, do you think it needs to be an experienced coach? Do you think it needs to be a young coach? Do you think it needs to be someone like Freddie who's got a high profile and had success at Origin?
They tried Dean Pay, Loz, as an inexperienced coach. And I guess you could argue that that didn't quite work out. Mm. So whether that's a bit of a black mark next to that theory...
Mm.
I'd like to see Cameron Cirillo do it. That's my theory.
Devil's
a young
advocate
coach.
Here, coming from the same system as Baz.
Yep.
Highly touted assistant coach.
Correct.
Do you go for another assistant coach.
Well, assistant coaches have to get a start at some point. You've got to give them a crack at some point in your life. But is it the right time? Is it the right roster? And are the expectations at Canterbury, given they've got a volatile supporter base, is it the right time to be throwing a young bloke in there? And will they tear him apart if he's none from four or five next year?
Yeah.
Just on Trent Barrett too, on the text line here, gents, can you ask Bulldog, has Barrett completely destroyed his coaching career because he quit publicly saying he can't do anything more for them? No club will take him on because he quit. He will become a liability for any club moving forward. No name to that one. But after what's happened at Manly and Canterbury, it'd be difficult for him to get a head coaching job, you'd think, going forward.
Yeah, I can't see it in the short term. The only way I could see it is, you know, if Trent decides to go to Super League and he might jag a Challenge Cup over there or a Premiership, just get away.
Mm.
Get away from the limelight for a while. Rebuild over there. He may not want to go to the north of England. He lives on the south coast in some nice place, and I don't know why he'd want to go to Hull, but that's one way of doing it. Or he goes back to being an assistant, rebuilds again there, and perhaps down the track. I mean, right now we're all saying he won't get a job, but we all forget things very quickly in this world. And in a year or two's time, if Trent is back coaching as an assistant, he might. But look, at this very point, I would find it very difficult, and I'm sure even Trent would say the same thing, that it didn't work well at Manly, it didn't end well at Canterbury, that a full-time job would seem a million miles away right now.
Do you think a hard-nosed coach like Flanagan or a Green would be the best option for the Bulldogs, given that they're premiership-winning coach? Or do you see those personalities maybe clashing with a bloke like Gus?
Potentially. If you get a hard-nosed coach in there, Laurie, who's got a hard-line stance on a lot of issues, and Flano's like that, and so is Paul Green, they're both, I wouldn't say pig-headed, but they've both got strong, controlling personalities, and that's what makes them so successful. But whether that would clash with Gus would be the $64,000 question. I still personally think, as I said before, I would still give it to a young bloke. I think the time at Canterbury is for something totally fresh, innovative. Let's have a clean start out there. Give him 10 months to rework his roster. Put David Ferner or Mick Potter in charge today. Let them see out the season. Replicate the Cronulla formula where Craig Fitzgibbon reworked his roster. And by the time he starts next year, later this year in December, he can start fresh.
There's always someone that wants the job, all right? There's always someone that will take the job, always someone that wants the job. But given the volatility of the Bulldogs, and in particular the way that their board or their constitution is, where the board gets elected every 2 years, and I'm led to believe it'll be early 2024 when the next elections are on. If you're a coach that goes there next year, 2023, and you have a similar start to what Trent Barrett's had in 12 months, what do they do?
Oh, you'd be nervous.
But even though you've signed for 2-3 years...
But you can't blame the board for that, for wanting to hold
no, no,
them
no,
to
but
account.
I'm just saying, so this might hold back. This might hold back the best candidate.
It could. As may working with Gus. There might be candidates out there think, you know what, that club's just red hot at the moment. I don't want to go near it, and I'll wait my turn for another club to come up. But I can't blame the board, Laurie, for holding Trent accountable.
Oh, no, I'm not blaming the board, but what I'm saying is if you've got someone out there that is the best possible candidate, he'd be sitting there thinking and weighing it all up, going, ooh, this is the scenario I'm walking into, and this could potentially play out like this.
Well, it could destroy your career. You go to Canterbury, lose your job like Trent Barrett, he may not get another kick.
And it may enhance your career too. Correct. You might have success there and you might kick and they have a great year and all of a sudden you're the pin-up boy. But things can go pear-shaped pretty quickly as it stands with the way that their constitution is. The period they're going through at the moment.
I wonder what Viliami, Kikau and Reid Marnie are thinking right now. They have come out through their managers saying that they will honour the deal, and that's acceptable, so they should. And there's probably no money left at their existing clubs anyway because both clubs have moved on. But they would have signed there with Trent in charge under this new horizon of the Barrett-Gould partnership, thinking that there's some solidity there, They're moving in the right direction. Then suddenly, bang, it gets cut off. So there must be now a couple of thoughts thinking, gee, I hope I've made the right decision here. There's no doubt that they'd be a little bit anxious about what's unfolding because they signed to go to a club which they thought was stable and suddenly, almost overnight, it's become very unstable.
Well, we saw one player already depart, didn't we, in Correct. Brent Naden. Why? 8 games he played for the club.
Yeah. You know, I did a bit of checking. There's a story in today's paper I've written about this. I spoke to his manager last night. He approached Gus on Monday morning, saying to Gus, look, I really want to play in the centres. And Gus has a lot of admiration for Brent Naden as a player, but he did say that we've got a lot of young kids coming through and there's probably not going to be an automatic start. Alan Ganey, who is his manager, very smart manager, Al Ganey, thought, well, if he doesn't want to play, or if he can't play centre there, I might take him somewhere where they do need a centre. And the West Tigers have lost a couple of centres through injury. Young Luke Garner was playing out there. He's a back rower, Loz. So Alan Ganey just thought, look, I'll just throw it out there, see what comes of it. Within 12 hours, they'd agreed. Naden had taken his family down to meet Michael Maguire. Both clubs had agreed on the finances. The Bulldogs are going to tip in some money this year and next year for Naden. And Alan Ganey, to his credit, lodged the new deal with the NRL at 4:05 yesterday afternoon, 5 minutes before the official team sheet has to come out. So it gave the West Tigers about 4 minutes to quickly readjust and put Brent Naden on that team sheet to play against the Bulldogs this Friday night at Leichhardt. Extraordinary stuff.
I hate it so much. What about the little boy or the little girl that goes and buys the Bulldogs jersey with Naden's number on the back? Like, I just think it's so bad for the game. I hate that quick movement through the season, you know. And again, we're not talking about Laurie Daly, Andrew Johns, Jonathan Thurston. I know that, but still, like, I find it so hard to, you know, for fans to stay loyal to their club when things like this can happen. And not only has he left in 5 minutes, he's now going to play against them. The Tigers are going to play against the Bulldogs. I don't think this is good for the game at all.
To Gus's credit, Alan Ganey said to Gus yesterday, if you release him right now, at this very hour, he will play against you on Friday night.
And Gus said, go for it.
And Gus did say, go for it. Gus did say, look, I'm not going to stand his way.
Well, Gus obviously thinks he's a great player then.
Yeah, well, he'd be looking after him too. He'd be saying, well, mate, you know, we will allow you to go and we're not going to hold you back and stop you from playing against us.
We don't want you to miss 1 week just so you can at least move house. Would you get straight in there?
But I think Gus's big motivation here is to try and release a few players. And this won't be the first. He won't be the last.
He won't be the last.
Because I think he knows that this roster needs rejigging. And if he can go to the players and it's a mutual agreement where they're looking for a better opportunity and they can get... it's best for both parties, I think.
Clarky, I'm with you. I'm surprised Gus didn't say, yes, you can go, but I'll give it to you after 4 o'clock.
Yeah,
wait
1 week. Yeah.
1 hour,
yeah.
The team comes out, he can't go in then.
Yeah.
So if Naden... plays in the weekend.
Scores 2 tries, wins the Tigers the game. How good?
100%.
Great buy from the
Tigers.
He
will start too. Mark my words, he will start. He will play at centre. And if he is the match winner, it just puts another layer of sweat
I'm not having a crack at Naden, Belmore. Tigers or Bulldogs. I'm just saying this. The system right now.
A lot of people would agree with you. It's not right to see players change so quickly. And we have this discussion about players signing 12 months in advance.
Yeah.
How we don't like it.
Just a couple of Roosters before you go. Angus Crichton and Victor Radley. What's going on with those two?
Angus Crichton, no official offer been made yet, but I checked in with some good sources at the Tigers, and there's a lot of interest there. He signed a 2-year deal with the Roosters. Sorry, he agreed to a 2-year deal. He hasn't signed the contract. It hasn't been registered. So he's off contract technically at the end of this year. Michael Maguire's got a very good relationship with Angus Crichton. He brought him back from rugby. He brought him to South. He gave him his NRL debut. So there's a strong bond there. So I'm not sure whether the deal will happen, but there's certainly going to be interest there. And Victor Radley, syndesmosis, worse than first thought. And went in yesterday. The Roosters thought it might be 2 weeks. It's ended up being 6 to 8. So poor old Victor, that curse around Origin. He's been so close for so long now.
I'd love to see him
play. So would I. Origin. Injury or suspensions robbed him a few years in a row now, Loz, and looks as if it's 6 weeks, it's game one. But if it is eight, well, that would almost slip over into game two as well.
Bulldogs beat the Tigers on the weekend. Does Madge survive?
You know what? I've tipped the Bulldogs, Clarkie. I just have that old-fashioned bounce-back effect every time a new coach seems to come in.
Yeah, I wonder what the stats are.
They're not good.
They're not,
because I've checked this before.
Yeah,
Loz,
right.
And it's a bit of a myth.
Yeah, it is.
It's a bit of a myth, but I just think the bounce back will be good this week. They're not playing an overly strong side, with all due respects to the Tigers. So I've tipped the Doggies to come out and fire up under their new interim coach.
What does that mean then for Madge? Does that change anything? I listened to Benji last night, and he was adamant that this is the most important game for the West Tigers this season. And isn't Benji on the he's on the board, but he's around.
He's an
the
ambassador.
Group.
He's inside
he's
the club
there.
To some degree.
So
yeah.
if he's saying that,
there's a few at Belmore that are keeping an eye on the Madge situation. Gus has got a huge rap on Madge. It would be unusual to chase a bloke who's under pressure himself, i.e. the coach. Having said that, he does have a big opinion of Michael Maguire.
Well, most coaches have been under pressure.
Of course.
Only the Bellamy's, Bennett's, Trent Robinson. There wouldn't be too many other coaches that are coaching at the moment or that are looking for jobs that haven't been under pressure at some point in time. I'll quickly want to ask you about young Selwyn Cobber.
Yep.
Starting to gain a strong reputation.
Absolutely. Eight clubs now, Laurie. Eight clubs have got their eye on him. Manly the latest. Interestingly, the Broncos are very confident they can nail him down to the end of 2025. I'd think he'd play Origin this year, whether you'd agree, Laurie.
Oh, I think
he'd be very close.
He'd be very close, mate.
Yeah, he's on about 180, but this next contract, Laurie, he could increase his worth to about $600,000. So his star is rising big time in rugby league, and we saw why against Manly on the weekend. So certainly he's a star on the horizon. His new deal will reflect that, and the race is on for Selwyn Cobbo.
I feared, maybe not this year, but Queensland, they're going to be back terrorising us. They've got some significant weapons.
Maybe that's why Freddie wants to leave.
Yeah. He's
get in at the right time. Get out at the right time.
What are you looking at me?
I think I was looking in a mirror. I wasn't looking at you. I was looking in a mirror.
Bulldog, another immense performance by you. Thank you so much.
My teammates have lifted me. You've carried me on your shoulders.
Stop scoffing, Laurie. Now, this text from Shire Raz. Wow, Mido, chaos at Nottingham Forest. They have won on penalties. 3-2. After Samba, the Forest keeper, saved three penalties. The crowd flooded the field like when Buddy kicked 1,000 goals. Good on you, Shire Raz. And yes, Nottingham Forest, after losing 2-1 in the second leg, so it finished 3-3 on aggregate, Forest have won on penalties. So it'll be Nottingham Forest up against Huddersfield in the Championship playoff final, and the winner going through to the English Premier League for next season. And Forest, a once mighty club in the UK. I think it's been quite a while since they've been in the top flight, so that'll be a big playoff final at Wembley coming up. And we saw Liverpool this morning beat Southampton 2-1 to ensure that they're 1 point behind Manchester City heading into the final day of the Premier League season. And last night in the A-League, we saw Melbourne Victory beat Western United 1-0 in the first leg of their semi-final at Amy Park. And this morning, JR, Jamie Rogers, morning to you again. We've got game one of the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA. Miami and Boston meet again. They met in the bubble a couple of years ago at the same stage.
Yeah, good morning, guys, and good morning to our listeners. And at that point, Miami beat the Boston Celtics in six games, and they went on to then lose to the Lakers in the final. So no doubt there's an extra bit of motivation for both of these teams, for the Heat to go one better, and same with the Celtics to actually progress through to the NBA Finals. But we've got a multi to celebrate the start of the NBA Finals. So tip-off is today at 10:30, and it is on today's game. Now, Dick Fain was on the show earlier this morning, and he also thinks that Miami's going to win today, and we all agree that Celtics are going to win in six. So with this multi, I've got Miami to win. And why I have done that is just because their home court advantage has been sensational throughout the regular season. They hold the best home record and they're 6-0 during this playoff period. So I thought they've got fresher legs. They're going to get the win at home. And then Jimmy Butler and Tyler Hero to score a combined 40 points for $6.
$6, there it is. East Finals today, game one. Miami to win against Boston. Butler and Hero, 40 plus between them. $6, like it, JR.
And I'm with you as well. I think Miami wins today. I'm very much on Boston to win in six and head through to the finals. Golden State and Dallas in the other semi-final, the Western Conference finals, sorry. What's your tip in the West finals, JR?
Oh, I'll be interested to see how they come out tomorrow, but I guess the clear, obvious one would be the Warriors. But Dallas were ultra impressive in the Western Conference semi-finals, so it'll be interesting to see. I reckon out of all four of these teams, you wouldn't be surprised to see any of them all progress through and then win.
Yeah, I think betting against Luka Doncic is just going to be frightening.
But then also on the reverse, though, you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Sure.
You know, like it's a really good matchup. It's going to be sensational. So that's on tomorrow with tip-off at 11 o'clock. So let's just hope we've got two really great series in store and all gets underway. Today, Loz, can you please give my multi-strength?
Well, I certainly will, JR. I don't know much about Hero, but I know about Jimmy Buckets.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So give Jimmy Buckets strength.
You're outstanding, Loz. Yeah. Who's Will's team?
Boston.
Oh, he'd be up and about.
So we've always been Celtics. Mm. Is it Celtics? Yeah, Boston Celtics. Yeah, we've always been the green machine. Mm. We get our green on and away we go. He loves Boston.
By the way, in the NFL, what have you decided what you're going to do this season after you jumped off the Raiders after 5 minutes last season?
I need to have a look at the roster of the Raiders, and I need to look at the rosters of some other teams.
Well, you got Devontae Adams from Green Bay. So you should be pretty happy about that.
Carr, I'm not sold on him.
I think you'll be all right. He's 29 years of age. He's played 136 games all for the Giants since his debut back in 2012. Adam Kennedy joining us. Morning to you, Adam.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are we?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Good to have you on the show. And describe the weirdness, I guess, of the last week or so. Farewelling, Leon Cameron.
Yeah, it was obviously a bit of a strange week last week. Found out the news on our main training day. So, I think everyone was a little bit rattled. We obviously knew, we're under a bit of pressure and Leon was under the pump. But, it still puts a bit of a shock in the system when, he's been around for 9 or so years. And then obviously, unfortunately, couldn't get the job done for him on the weekend. And now moving into a bit of a new look at the moment. So, sort of just getting used to it all. Strange times compared to a normal year.
Adam, how hard is that from a player's perspective? And I've heard a number of your players or your teammates come out and say, look, we as a playing unit have got to take, a lot of the heat for the way we've performed. So it must be extremely difficult, as you say, to have someone that has coached the team, been around the team for such a long period of time, and that respect's there, to see him go, it must be hard for you boys.
Oh, it's definitely hard because, we've obviously, Leon's obviously built a lot of really strong relationships with all the players and staff. So it was really hard to see what he had to go through because he obviously, loves what he was doing. And, I know what Leon's like. And, even though the club was struggling, he would have loved to have, picked us up out of it. Mm. So that was definitely difficult. But in saying that, we've sort of just got to, get on with it. Like Mark McVay spoke to the whole group yesterday and, he's trying to put a few spins on things his way. So, as sad as it is to see Leon go, we've got another game in, 5 or so days. So we've got to try and get ourselves up and, try to freshen ourselves up and take on the next 13 games.
Does Mark see the game like Leon? Is there any major changes? And does a guy like James Hurd play a bigger role now?
Yeah, so I think James will get maybe a little bit more involved. We're not sure how much this yet. And also, Mark's pulled in Dean Solomon, who's, had a great playing career and also been around the coaching ranks for a number of years. So he's pulled a bit of support in, which is exciting as players because there's going to be new ideas, I'm sure, going forward. That's something we'll probably learn about over the next few days because we've sort of got to learn, really quickly.
Yeah.
What type of coach do you think the club needs going forward? We got you there, Adam? I think we've lost him.
A winning one. I'll answer it for him. One that brings success.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because they've got such a talented list, but then you listen to some experts and they say the top end of their roster is big, but then it drops away pretty quickly. But, you know, a lot of people that we speak to, and Crawf is one, that say the Giants should be playing finals football. They've got a roster there that should be playing finals football.
I've enjoyed the... Well, not enjoyment is not the right word. I've respected the way a lot of the Giants players have come out and have really tried to be accountable and responsible and take that pressure off their coach as well. Like, I think for me that's... It is. I know, and cricket's a very different sport, right? But on the field, you are 100% accountable. There's only so much a coach can do. I know in rugby league and AFL and rugby union, it might be a lot different. But I still love it when the players do own that responsibility. And I think certainly the senior players at the Giants, they've been brilliant. And I think that shows the right people are at the club. You know, they've got the right leadership. They've got the right people. They can now get this balance with whoever they believe is the ideal coach. The stock's there.
Adam, I think we've got you back there. And just asking you, you mentioned some of those, you know, the likes of Dean Solomon have come on board, Mark McVay's to step in for the moment. But when you look across your roster and you've been at the club for a decade now, what type of coach do you think you need going forward? Is it that sort of hard head, experienced coach, or someone a bit younger with fresh ideas to freshen the group up?
I'd probably just be making something up if... you know, I tried to hit the nail on the head, but I know Mark will come in and, because he obviously worked with Leon for so long, there will be similar ideas, but he'll definitely put his own spin on it and probably knows that we need, you know, a little bit of a change up and freshen up, you know, through the mind and maybe the way we play. So I'm really excited as to what he brings. As I said, I forgot cut off, but we'll learn all of that. And, you know, he told us yesterday we've got to take it on board, be open-minded and really practice it a lot throughout the week because we are in such a unique position and, we're mid-season. I wouldn't say it's a new game plan, but, yeah, definitely a new look on things.
Yeah, and no doubt when you review the games and the games that you've lost, you know, you work out what's been working and what hasn't been working. Has it been a reoccurring theme, what's been letting you down, or has it been something that's just different every week?
One thing with the group is, you know, when we are, if we're letting ourselves down in a certain area and we focus on it for a week, we actually respond in that area. But there's obviously, you know, a bit of an inconsistent issue at the club. Because we potentially might fall away in a different area.
Right. Yeah.
That's something we have to address, and we have to become more consistent as a playing group. And I just caught the back end of the players definitely are taking the responsibility. Because our coaches put in a lot of effort. They put in a lot of time to us, and sometimes things just don't go as planned, and it is frustrating for everyone. But We're also super excited that, we can still make a difference over the next, 3 months.
Looking towards Sunday, and West Coast certainly got their own problems at the moment, but what areas have you identified that you need to improve from the loss to Carlton and tackle West Coast on Sunday?
I think talking about inconsistency, I think one thing was, I think at times throughout the game, we brought a lot of pressure to Carlton, but we also dropped away. And not just that, I think little different things with our ball movement. We attacked the game, well at times, but then at other times we're probably, a bit too defensive. So it's just about bringing the whole game together and doing it for four quarters as well, because we've shown that we can do it, for 2.5 quarters and, challenge teams right up there. But whether it's a bad start or we drop away late in the game, that's something that we just have to get better at.
And, mate, your own future, I believe you're off contract this year, or you played your whole career there at the Giants. No doubt you'd love to stay.
Yeah, I love the club. I want to be, Giants life. I'm playing my whole career here, so if Jace McCartney's listening, my door's always open.
Hey, Adam, I suppose this is, when you hear footy cliches, just taking it a game at a time. I mean, you've only won a couple of games this year. You can't be thinking about finals football. Do you give up on finals football, or is it just
see how we go. Win a game, then win the next one, and then see if we get a bit of momentum building.
Yeah, oh, look, it's exactly that. I hate to sit here and you know, do a bit of a dull interview and go, give it all the cliches in the book, but that's genuinely, I think they're cliches for a reason, and that's genuinely what it is. So our focus is on West Coast this week, but, you know, as for later on in the year, we've got to sort, you know, a lot of things out and do it quickly, as I said, but, you know, never say never. There's still a lot of season to go. That's something I'm really excited about. I know the guys are as well.
Mate, really appreciate your time this morning, and good luck against the Eagles on Sunday.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it a lot.
Adam Kennedy there, GWS defender, and kicked a beauty, by the way, last week, and that was just the 14th goal of his career. They're $1.10 against the Eagles, $7. The Eagles essentially tanking this year. They're plus 38.5 at the start with Tab. Huge game Friday night in Melbourne, Marvel Stadium. 4th v 5th, Swans and Carlton. And the Swans $1.85, slight favourites travelling to Melbourne against the Blues $1.95, who we just saw beat the Giants by 30 points last weekend. Dane Rampey's 200th as well, and the Swans are pretty good at getting up for milestone games, but that's a big game Friday night, Lozar.
Well, it is, Mitter. You know, it's one of those games where you just have to win. You got to win. If you want to play top four, Carlton are playing some really good footy at the moment, and you know they're revitalised under Voss. But the Swans have been a little bit inconsistent.
Just had those back-to-back losses at home, which are Brisbane one you can cop, but the Suns the following week.
The Suns the following week, but even against Brisbane, mate. I mean, Brisbane are a very classy side and up there with a rung below Melbourne. But a lot of people tell you the Swans are. Got a pretty good list, and they're a top four team as well. So, I think if the Swans are a serious contender, they win on the weekend. They beat Carlton this weekend.
Brad Davidson, morning to you, mate.
Morning, Jared. Morning, everyone.
How did Nature Strip and Home Affairs go in their jump outs yesterday?
Yeah, Chris Waller was pleased with both horses there yesterday in those jump outs. I think they went in separate heats, but just given an easy time of it. Chris Waller saying the track was still heavy there at Rosehill yesterday, so he didn't want to knock them about too much, but he was pleased with their efforts. I think they're about 4 weeks away from that Kingston Stakes and Diamond Jubilee now, guys. So not long, and I'm sure they'll be on the plane soon and heading over there, but just getting those fitness levels up, heading towards those big races in about a month's time.
Dave, did you agree with the Michael Post suspension appeal not going the way he obviously would have hoped?
Yeah, Clarkie, it was an interesting one, wasn't it? Obviously, I think the defence argued that no jockey's made the same mistake twice, and I don't think even with that suspension he was going to make the same mistake twice. But look, I thought probably around 6 weeks was right, but I think Rhys McLeod got a similar suspension of 2 months going back some time ago. So it was a bit of a precedent there. They had a crack at the appeal, but no luck with getting any time off that 2 month suspension for going a lap early there at Kyneton about a week and a half ago. So that's the scenario there.
Zaki drew barrier 3 for the Dooman Cup, but what's the track going to be like?
Well, Loz, at the moment it's a heavy 10, but we'll just have to wait and see how it goes throughout the week. Obviously, they made the right call there last week, didn't they, by moving it to Eagle Farm, considering the conditions on the day. It's a bit patchy this week. Were they looking at 10 to 20 mil on Saturday again, 1 to 5 on Friday in Brisbane, and then the next couple of days aren't too bad. The good thing that they've got in their favour is they do have warm days up there still, 26, 24, 23. So if they can get a bit of a break in that weather, hopefully that track can bounce back. But look, it's going to be wet to some degree, no doubt about it, after all the rain they've had. But barrier number 3 for Zaki, I think he's $1.50 at this stage. He's scared a lot of them away and clearly the one to beat once again. But look, he's not, I wouldn't say he's absolutely bulletproof. He got the job done well there in the Hollandale, but it wasn't like, wow. Yeah, there's still a little chink in his armour, I reckon, at that top level sometimes. But he's not the absolute out-and-out-and-out superstar, I don't think. But saying all that, clearly the horse to beat, of course.
What do you like today?
There's a few I don't mind today on the Kensington track and at Ballarat. The first one at Ballarat was race number 1, number 3, Dashing. I thought it looked really well suited there today. Unfortunately, the second favourite's just come out, which had absolutely zero chance, and it was a $6 chance. So that's always frustrating when those come out of the market and we cop deductions for those horses. But I couldn't work out how it was a $6 chance. But anyway, that's the way that goes. A couple on the Kensington track as well. Race 3, number 8, Timpanist, I thought was a good roughie. Trialling really nicely and got some really good figures last preparation to be very competitive here first up today. And the other one for me, race 7, number 7, Combella Fee. I've also had something small on the leader in there, number 3, So United. But the main bet for me, number 7, Combella Fee. Look, trialling well. She comes to hand quickly. Joanna Shea's a good fresh trainer. And I think she gets the right sort of run with 55 kilos on her back. She gets 7 kilos off from the bush, who's going great guns for sure, but just has that big weight. And I think she'll be too strong late. Race 7, number 7, Combella Fee.
Yeah, seeing plenty of money for Timpanist in race 3, number 8. It's the roughie in that field. It's 460 the field, so a small spread in the market. But it's the second best backed after the favourite podium in that race.
Yeah, I don't think it's a race that's overly strong. Some horses coming off some wins, but not in great figures, to be honest. And this horse is, just gets in really well with 53 kilos. The recent trials have been superb, and it comes to hand pretty quickly. And it runs over a mile last preparation, would have it right in the finish here. So expecting it to run very well.
Okay, thanks so much, Dobo.
Thanks, guys.